Welcome to another episode of the Money and Business Hero podcast, where we talk about the three pillars of financial success: money mindset, money management, and money making. My name is Florian Fritz, and my guest today is cash flow expert and the anti-financial advisor. Welcome to the show. Great to have you here, Chris Miles.
Thanks, Florian. Pleasure to be here.
Great to have you. Now, yeah, what is an anti-financial advisor?
Yeah, pretty much means I think mutual funds suck. That's what it means.
Okay.
Well, it's why? It's kind of like you've been told your whole life to, you know, spend nothing, save everything, save it forever, preferably in something that financial advisors offer, like mutual funds. And then hopefully someday you have something. And the truth is, it's just not the case. And I learned this firsthand. I mean, I wasn't raised learning a lot about money, right? I mean, I was raised by a family that they were good hard workers. They taught me good values, your word is your bond, and that kind of thing. But they also taught me scarcity phrases around money. Things like, well, we can't afford it. There's not enough. You know, what do you think I am? Made of money? Money doesn't grow on trees, you know? You know, those kind of phrases I heard growing up. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, naturally as a kid, I wanted a different life than that. And so as I went to college, I wanted to become a business consultant, but I figured if I'm going to be a business consultant, shouldn't I have real life business experience? So I started, like, I actually took a sabbatical from my college days there, and I was trying to look for some sort of business to do, but I wasn't sure what it was. And then the opportunity came up to become a financial advisor, not knowing that it was actually much easier to get in than I thought, because I thought you had to be a financial genius. You had to have like all these degrees and stuff and finances. No, you just have to not have a criminal record and pass a test with 70%, which I do really well at. So I became a financial advisor, and I actually enjoy being an entrepreneur so much to the point that I actually never went back to college. I never finished my degree, stayed dropped out. So I'm technically a college dropout, like just like your Bill Gates, right? But as time went on though, I realized pretty quickly that something was off. And I realized this when I sat down with my dad, the very guy that told me, hey, you should save all your money, pay off your debt. He was kind of like Dave Ramsey's best friend. In fact, it was probably the guy that Dave Ramsey listened to growing up. And so I sat down with him and he says, all right, Chris, I'm 61 years old. I want to retire. And so I look at his whole portfolio for the first time in my life. I see his mutual funds that he has in his 401k. He'd been stuffing his 401k full. He had paid off his debt early, including his house. He paid it off in 18 years, completely debt-free. Everything you'd think would be perfect for being financially free, right? Wrong. I said, Dad, here's the deal. If you want to retire today, you better hope you die in 5 years, because that's how long it's going to be before you run out of money. Now, remember, this guy was the penny pinching saver, and still it wasn't enough, because it didn't help that Y2K, you know, took away some of his money out of his 401k, right? And it was just recovering again at that point in the early 2000s. And he said, well, what do I do, Chris? I said, I don't know. You did everything right. I mean, I could try to get you in this product or that product, but the truth is that they're still stock market based. And even if they're indexed, still, if the stock market doesn't return well enough, it may not be enough. And that bugged me, because I walked away not giving him a real answer. And of course, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. One of my friends that I had actually trained to be a financial advisor had left to go be a real estate investor. And so we started talking a little bit. We got in this little argument. I started telling him that I thought stocks were better than real estate. And he kind of got in my face. He said, Chris, how many of your clients are truly financially free where they don't worry about running out of money? And he knew he had me there because he'd been trained in the industry. I was like, well, everybody worries about running out of money when they do a financial plan, because they all think they're going to outlive their money. Okay, Chris, well, how about this? How many of you guys as financial advisors are financially free, not off the commissions you're earning, but actually doing these investments? And I knew he got me there too, because there's guys working in my office since the late 1970s. And out of over 100 people, I couldn't find one of them that was really financially free off the investments either. And if anybody should have it figured out, shouldn't it be us as the experts, the financial advisors, right? No, it wasn't. And so it kind of got me on a journey. I actually eventually quit being a financial advisor, vowed never to teach about money again. And I actually started going more this alternative investment route, like in real estate investing and things like that. And the next thing I know, I was 28 years old. And as a 28-year-old, almost 29, I was at a point where I had enough money coming in that I didn't have to work anymore. And that blew my mind, because in the financial advisor brain I had, I was going to accumulate $2 million, pull out the usual 3%, So then I lived on $60,000 a year, which 20 years ago sounded like a great lifestyle. Today sounds like barely over lower class, right? Poor class or whatever. But at the time, that was my goal. I was, if I could do that by the time I'm 40, that would be amazing. So I got to the point where I came out of retirement in 2007 because everybody wanted to know how I did what I did. And I've been teaching people really how to increase their cash flow, improve their passive income, and get to the point where they're work optional, where they work because they want to, not because they have to.
Awesome. That's great. So what do you teach them differently now? What do you teach people to do now? How do you become financially free?
Yeah, here's the three pieces of advice I would give is get lean, get liquid, and get out, right? Get lean. Now, I don't mean being as dirt cheap like my dad is. I don't want you to be a tightwad. I don't want you to cut out every piece of joy out of your life just for that someday life, because the problem is that if you do that, you might miss out on the best parts of your life. But what I am saying is, you know, if you're going to spend money, spend on the things that make you, that really bring you joy, you know, kind of like Marie Kondo, right? Spend money on those things, you know, and definitely get your money to a place where you've reduced your expenses and you have enough income coming in so that you have this gap in between the two. And by the way, bonus tip here, most people ignore that you can increase income, right? Mm-hmm. They always try to cut down expenses, especially those savers, right? Those ultra penny pinching, scarcity driven savers and hoarders. They want to reduce their expenses so far, but you can't only go so far before you're living in a cardboard box. But how can we increase your active income more so that there's more to put away?
You can increase much more than you can save, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Income's infinite, but expenses, they are finite, right? So make sure that you have more there. So really get lean. A great way to do that, by the way, is start tracking your money. Surprisingly enough, most people watch their bank account balances, but they don't watch how much money is coming in, how much is really going out. So I recommend people use tools like Mint is a great one to use. It's free online. Same company does QuickBooks, does a free online for personal finances as well. Mint's a great, easy tool you can use to make it automated. So you don't have to, you know, like what my wife does, she like uses a spreadsheet. She has to tally everything up with a calculator. If you happen to miss that one number, you have to clear it and start over again because you gassed up six times during the month or whatever it might be, right? Don't do that. Mint can make it easy to where it actually will automatically categorize it for you after you've taught it. So it has a little bit of that natural, you know, intelligence. I'm not going to call it AI because it's not AI. It's more mechanized, right? So you can do that. The get liquid means get your money in cash, right? Like have it liquid. So many times when people have that money that they free up, a lot of times they'll say, well, maybe I should lock it up into prison. Maybe I should lock it up and pay off my house. Maybe I should pay an extra into my 401k or my IRAs and stuff, locking their money up, which kind of ties with the getting out piece, right? Because when you're not liquid, most financial advice is telling you to lock up money with them. Banks want you to lock up money with them by paying off your house. They want you to lock up money with them in Fidelity or Charles Schwab or whatever company you might be dealing with, right?
Whatever pays high commissions.
Even the Vanguard funds. What's that?
Whatever pays high commissions to them.
You got it. I mean, heck, even the index funds. I mean, sometimes if you're trying to do that, but it's still in an IRA or a 401k structure, still it's locked up. You can't get to it without having had your hand slapped with a 10% penalty because you're not 59 and a half yet. And then you get taxed on it on top of that. It's just not a great place to be. I'm not saying it's not a place you could store money, but I've found that the best way, if you want to retire early, you want to become financially independent and free earlier, especially before the age of 60, that's where you can have that money in liquid cash. It can literally be in savings account, right? Not that I'm saying that's the best strategy. There are other types of strategies you can do. Even there's tax-free savings accounts you can use that are actually really good. They can pay you a lot more. But get it liquid. Get it to the point where you have it available to use to then get it out and invest it in places that can produce actual income. So places are things like real estate investing, for example. Now, I'm not talking about buying the real estate property in your backyard. That's what everybody thinks, right? They're like, oh, I live in California, so I'm going to buy $1 million property in my backyard. Don't even go there. In fact, if you're in the western half of the United States, you probably don't want to buy anything here, right? I'm in the western half of the United States. I don't dare buy anything here because I know in the Midwest and the Southeast, I can make a lot more money with a lower price. I can make just as good rent, but lower prices, which means I make more income. And so, yeah, I mean, I can, and if I buy a rental, I don't do what I did before the last recession, where the last recession I was managing my own properties. That was horrible. I'm a horrible property manager. now I buy properties all over the country, but I buy them with a property manager already in place. So I'm hands off. I manage the property manager. I still have to watch it. There's an element of stewardship involved there, but I'm not dealing with the tenants, the toilets, and the trash, right? They're dealing with that stuff. I get the net checks. And usually I can make at least a, even a worst case, even today with a higher interest rate environment, I can usually make at least a 7 or 8%, what they call a cash on cash return. But often I can make at least 10% plus, depending on where I'm buying these properties. There's also things like different types of funds that are in the alternative space, not mutual funds, not REITs. A lot of people say, oh, you're buying a REIT? No, that's not real estate investing. That's a paper asset masking as real estate investing. No, I go and buy into different types of funds where maybe that fund goes and buys into a particular property. It could be like a syndication, right? Where you buy into a self-storage facility. It could be into, you know, senior living. It could be into apartment buildings, although that's not great right now. It could go into oil and gas even. I actually have an investment right now where I get paid from the lease on the land and royalties from the drilling. So we kind of get this double dip effect, allowing us to get easily double digit returns plus. Some of my clients make more money than I do on some of those deals because they got into the better project than I got in, right? You know, like I know one of my clients, a few of my clients actually got into a project where they're making 35% last year, you know, not guaranteed, of course, but again, so much better than making the average S&P 500 return, which for the last 30 years, if you look at the actual yield, has only been about 7.7% per year. That's nothing. In comparison, if I can make double digit returns and even get some tax benefits, like on some of these too, I even have partnerships. I have a land partnership where I finance it, but these other guys buy and sell raw land, sell it to people on terms. So we become the bank and I'm making about a 40 to 45% cash on cash return there. Now I have other things that pay me like 7 or 8% cash on cash, but that's, I mean, think about that. I look at that as bad on the low end, and that's typically what you would hope for in the stock market, right? Which is why people haven't become financially free, because they're hoping and praying for this mediocre return with high risks. And so there's just so many different things you could be doing to make more money now. So that's what I mean by get lean, get liquid, and get out. And you know, I'll tell you, it's the path to financial freedom is much faster, not overnight, but it's definitely a lot shorter than potentially never if you go with the traditional financial advice.
Absolutely. And here people are not even in the stock market. Most people have their money in the bank account for 0%, right? So they would be happy if they would get 7, but yeah. Okay. How do we start? Let's say people say, how do I buy a property if I don't have any money for it?
That's a great question. Because if you don't have money, you're probably not buying the property. Now, there is a way to do it. But it depends on how you want to be involved in this, right? Because if someone has no money right now, I would just say this, don't even worry about investing right now. Just increase your education. And again, focus on the get lean and getting liquid. That's what you need to do first. Like build up that emergency fund. Even when we work with clients, we don't want them touching any of their 6 months of emergency fund. So if your expenses are $5,000 a month, you better make sure there's $30,000 you don't touch, you don't invest it. The big mistake I see with a lot of people starting out, they say, I just built up, especially after 2020, right? When the government started paying extra checks to everybody, all these people came out of the woodwork saying, I got 10,000 bucks now. I've never had 10,000 bucks. Where do I invest it to make a lot of money? Yeah, exactly. And those are the first people that went and gambled in Bitcoin, the first people that went and bought some stupid stock that ended up tanking, right? That's exactly what Robert Kiyosaki, author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, would call dumb money, right? I'm not saying these people are dumb, but the dumb money is the uneducated investor that just throws money, usually after everything's already been hot, right? If you hear about something in the media, that's the time not to buy it. It's when everybody says, don't do this, that's when you should do it. So if everybody says, don't buy real estate, which you're hearing a lot of people say now, guess what's a good time to do? Buy real estate. Another good example, I remember in 2022, people said, don't keep cash in the savings account. You're losing to inflation. Don't keep cash on hand. So what I start doing, I kept cash on hand. I found out that there's a real secret to success. And maybe this goes along with the question you might be asking anyways, like one of the big secrets of wealth building is do the opposite of what everybody else tells you to do. Because pretty much everybody else is in the rat race, right? They're broke. They're living paycheck to paycheck. They're in a survival mode and they listen to the news, and the news is always wrong, in my opinion, right? Like they're always late to the party. And that's why people that listen to the news usually lose the most money. It's easy come, easy go. So going back to your original question, if you don't have a lot of money, Build it up. Start saving. Start there. Don't even worry about trying to get your money working for you. Because let's just say you happen to have $10,000 saved up. Well, if you made 10% on $10,000, you only made $1,000 that year. I would much rather have you go to your boss and say, hey, what can I do that would earn me a raise? What can I do for the company or for you? How can I create value or serve you guys in a way that would earn me a raise? And then let them answer and then hold them to it. You know, that's one of the fastest and easiest ways to make money right now, especially in an inflationary market, is to do that. Then as you start building up the cash, then we can start building up more passive income. Now, I will say there is one strategy you can do with little money out of pocket that is real estate investing or real estate based. You could do what's called the BRRRR strategy, right? You might've heard this on your show before. It's buy, renovate, refinance, and then repeat. And I might be missing an R in there, but basically you buy a property, maybe you buy it for cheap. You live in that property. You might start renovating it a little bit. Maybe it needs some work, maybe it doesn't. Then you start, rent. That's the other one. I can't forget that one. And then maybe you rent out the other part. So maybe it's a basement. Maybe it's another unit. Maybe you're buying a duplex. You get one side and then you rent out the other, so that those people are helping pay for your mortgage for you, right? And if it's like an FHA loan, which might be only 3.5% down, and let's just say this property is $300,000, well, great. Well, you just bought this property with $10,000 down, right? And you got into it, you have a place to live, but you can also rent out the other half and be able to make that money. And as it starts to appreciate and grow over time, you can even refinance it, you know, or even just move out. Go and buy another property, do the same thing, live in it for a little bit, rent out, because now you have that duplex with two units renting, right? You move in the next one, buy another duplex, and then maybe you do the same thing. Eventually you move out of that and move into another one, right? So you're always putting less down payment than you would as an investor, because if you can do an FHA loan at 3.5% or even 5%, that's better than having to put 20% down as an investor. So there are ways to do it, but that requires more time and energy. So just know that you might do less money, but if you don't have a lot of money, time and energy is necessary to be able to allow that to really work.
Okay, so if you don't have much money, you can put in your time and your effort. Okay, great. Sounds good. So we know where to start. How do we scale?
Yep.
How do we get bigger and financially free just by moving from one to the next? Or...
Yeah. So then you kind of create what's called an income snowball or avalanche, right? Is that, say you, like for example, there's an investment that my clients have access to that the guy does, you know, really construction, new construction. He's already bought the land, so he's already got a lot of equity in it from the get-go. Does new construction, and then he rents out the properties after they've been constructed. And he'll pay 1% a month on that, right? So if you have $100,000, you invest that there, that's paying you $1,000 a month. Now you could just say, cool, now I can buy that dream car, right? You could do that, but I'd rather have you take that $1,000 a month, build that up to then do the next investment. Now, if you're trying to save it for $100,000, it might be a while, but you could do things like, you know, turnkey rentals, like I mentioned before, where a property manager has those properties. If you have a good credit, you can actually get a mortgage on the majority of that. So you put 20% down that property while the mortgage takes care of the rest. So that means that, let's just say it's a $200,000 home that you're buying, a rental. That down payment is going to be $40,000, right? Build up that cash flow plus the money you're already saving anyways. Again, if you don't have it going to the 401k, which pays you that piddly little match, everybody thinks the 50% or 100% match is worth something. But when you actually look at the compounding effect of that match, it's actually only adding about another 2 to 3%. And that's only if you do up to the 100% match. It only adds about a 2 or 3% return. Just so you know, side note here, Fidelity, right? I just looked at their returns for the last 10 years. If you ever look at those target date funds, most millennials pick the target date funds of like 2050 or 2055 or 60, right? Well, funny enough, or maybe I shouldn't say funny. It's not funny. It's actually kind of sad. The return on those are actually 2% less than what the stock market did. So even though you think you're in the stock market, the S&P, right, which actually in that same period of time, the last 10 years, 2013 to 2023, did a 10.1% actual yield. But guess what? These ones only did 8%, almost 8% flat. So people might say, I made 8%. No, you did 2% worse than the stock market. That means if the stock market goes down, you'll probably end up potentially doing worse than what the stock market did. And even worse, if, again, like I said, 7.7% is the actual yield of the 30-year long-term return of the S&P. Well, if you're 2% less, that puts you at 5.7%, doesn't it? And that doesn't include the 0.75% cost coming out, which really puts you at about a 5% net return in your 401k. So even if you get a good solid match, you do what everybody considers smart, which is I'm going to throw on up to the match. Well, if it only, I'm going to go aggressive here because it's only a rare situation this occurs. But say you get 3% compounded return on that. Well, 5 + 3 is only 8. Well, if I can do way better than that, you know, where I make easily double digit returns and that's cash flow coming now, it's a no brainer. So a lot of our people will actually stop funding the 401k. They'll say, this is high risk. Who's to say this is even going to work well, especially when Charlie Munger just came out and said, get used to making less because the stock market's easy, expecting not to go as good as it was in the past. He's like, well, great. Go over here where we can actually make a better return on our money. And so that's the big thing is like, if you can start to build the cash you would have put in the 401k anyways, and add that to the passive income, now you got more cash to start using. It might be a year or two down the road, but maybe you buy that next property. And maybe that adds another $300 a month. I go very conservative on that, right? $300 a month now, but that raises a little bit every year as rents go up. Well, great. Now you've gotten up to $1,300, $1,400 and so on per month. You just keep adding that. You go do the next deal. I have one guy right now, his goal was $5,000 a month. That's all he really wanted. And he's just buying one property a year. And he's like, yep, I'm only expecting to make a few hundred a month off that. He's combined with one of the other strategies we talk about, which is called, there's one called infinite banking that's out there. We actually don't even like most of the infinite bankers out there where they use whole life to try to build it up for retirement. We don't do that. We actually do like a very low cost whole life policy to then allow it to max out the cash and then invest that even in the first year. And so he's already been doing that strategy to help buy those properties. He's actually going to become, even though he's just buying, he's only saving really about $15,000 or so a year. He's going to get to about $5,000 a month by 2030, you know, with that passive income, just by reinvesting that money, keep cycling it through, moving the cash flow and reinvesting it. That's again, like he's not like some of our clients where they have hundreds of thousands or even a few million dollars to invest. He had like 100,000 invest in the beginning, and he's just reinvesting the cash flow each year to do that. And it's pretty awesome. It's a lot better than probably never getting to retirement doing the traditional plan.
Absolutely. And you're still being nice with those target funds because towards the end, they'll be even worse because they kind of take less risk, right?
That's right. That's right. Yep. They'll reallocate to those lower cost, you know, like lower returning bond funds and things like that. So that's the hard thing is that, you know, I realize this as a financial advisor is that, again, I had all the good intentions. I know you did too, because you were in that space as well. Well, I assume you had good intentions. Maybe you didn't, but you don't come across as a nefarious guy to me, but I know I wanted to help people, but I know that also when I put the numbers in a calculator, it was very discouraging because I would prepare to meet with that client to kind of come with this proposal of what the retirement could look like based on their current path or what they could be doing. But I remember if I put in, especially in the 2000s, we believe 10, 12% was realistic, right? Well, when I started backing off to 8%, which as I've already mentioned is a little bit high still, I put in 8%, those numbers didn't look so good anymore. Now those same people have to save more money. But even worse was when I started putting in inflation. And at first I would put in 3%, but that was too depressing because nobody would become retired by that point, especially if they were a young married couple starting out in life. So I'd have to put in and say, well, maybe I'll make inflation 1%. Or 2%, right? I'd have to alter the numbers just to give them hope if I were trying to be realistic with the numbers. And even then, I think I was overpromising. That was kind of that big aha moment for me is like, I have to sell something on a best case scenario for it to work versus what's the realistic or even what's a worst case scenario? What will happen to their lives? And now we're seeing people right now that literally, if you look at some of the stats, I actually just did a podcast on this on my own show. But the stats are that most people in the 50s, and they think they need at least $1.4 million to retire, but they only have $110,000 on average. I don't think it was their fault. I don't think it wasn't because they weren't saving. Because you look at the statistics, most people are saving. In fact, more than half of people that are qualified to save in a 401k do actually use their 401k. Even weirdos like me that qualify for it and then hate them and don't use them, right? Still, there's about 52% of people that actually do fund their 401ks. They're saving money, but it's not enough. Not because they're not saving enough, although that's probably true, but it's because of where they're saving it. They're saving it in the wrong place And as a result, they could never save enough to be able to have the kind of life that they would want in retirement.
Mm-hmm. Now, Chris, you've been financially free since you were 28.
Mm-hmm.
How important is money for you now?
You know what? It depends on how you define important. I love money. It's great. Do I think about it a lot? No. It's kind of like air, right? When you have an abundance of it, you don't really think about it as much. You just keep breathing, you know? So I still respect it, and it's very important. What's more important to me is being a wise steward of my money. I think that's the thing, is that I look at money as like anything else in my life, is that I have a stewardship, just like with my kids, just like with my marriage, I have a stewardship over that. And if I don't take care of it, it falls away, right? Basically, whatever you ignore leaves you. You ignore your teeth, you'll lose them, right? You ignore your spouse, they'll leave you. If you ignore your money, it'll leave you too. So it's important enough that I pay attention to it, but not so important that I obsess over it.
Awesome. Beautiful. Thank you. Now, what is your best wealth building tip for our audience?
Well, I mentioned one earlier, and it's funny you mentioned that, but I'm going to say this. I'm going to go back to an earlier point that I made, which is what changed my life financially. Like when money went from a mysterious thing of how to make it to something that was formulaic and predictable. And that's this, is that dollars follow value. Or in other words, dollars follow the value you create for other people. The biggest question you should be asking is not, how do I make more money? You should be asking instead, how can I serve people, solve problems, or add value in such a way that money is just a natural byproduct? When you realize there's a cause and effect relationship, that the more value you provide, like when I mentioned going to your boss, your employer, and asking, what can I do to serve you guys? What can I do to merit me a raise or earn a raise? Not many people do that. I actually had a client do that before, and he had 100 people going for the same job position. There was two positions, 100 people applied. He got one of those positions. They said it wasn't because he was the most talented, because there was guys that did a better job, but it's because he was the only one out of 100 that even asked, what could I do to earn this job, this promotion? And that impressed them to the point they said, we gave you the second position. That's a key, guys. Like if you understand that money is solely about serving people and solving problems, that people want to exchange money to be able to have your value in their life, you'll realize that making money is so easy. And this investing stuff we talk about, that's almost a byproduct, because you'll have more than enough money to invest and make more on top of it.
Awesome. Beautiful. Thank you. Now, Chris, you do have a podcast as well, right?
I do. It's called the Money Ripples Podcast. You can find it on iTunes, YouTube, even on our website, moneyripples.com.
What is it about? What are you talking about in Money Ripples?
Pretty much this.
Okay.
We talk a lot about this, right? Like really flipping it upside down, like really breaking the status quo. Our big thing is really about how to make cash flow and passive income today, not 30 or 40 years from now. Kind of like my sign, right? Live your life now, not tomorrow. It's like, how do we create those results today? And actually talk strategy, just like we've been talking about here today as well. We even talk about other things, even paying off debt. You know, we'll talk about, you know, making money and even occasionally business and stuff. But it's really about this alternative investment space. Like, how do you actually do the things that aren't taught by financial advisors? In fact, they're afraid to teach you. That's what we teach on the show.
Awesome. Great. I will definitely share the link to this with the episode. If anybody would like to reach out to you, how can they find you?
Yep. Just go to moneyripples.com and you can contact us right there.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much for coming, Chris.
Such an honor. Thank you.
It's been a great conversation. And thank you, everyone, for listening. If you like the episode, don't forget to subscribe, to like this episode, and to write a review so you help other people to find this podcast. Thank you so much, and talk to you in our next show. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Money and Business Hero podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode and you got some value from it. Please take a moment to leave a rating, or even better, a review. That helps awesome people like you to find the show and me to produce more and even better episodes. And don't forget to subscribe. If you want to get regular free tips, tools, techniques on how to build wealth and financial freedom, or simply how to improve your financial life in all three pillars of financial success, join my free Money Hero Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/moneyhero. Find the link in the description, or find out more on the website moneyheroacademy.com. See you there.